Chris Young.
Okay. Hi everyone, I'm Chris, and thank you for inviting me. And I'll be talking about the Atlas Run 2 CC searches. So, Atlas has also presented a whole lot of exotic searches, like we talked about earlier, where there's diejets and even diphotons and things. But today I will just talk about CC searches. And Run 2 is an exciting time for the LHC with good prospects for the discovery of supersymmetry. And so here I'll cover the 2015 searches. We heard from George about some of the Run 1 searches before. And we've searched in 10 different analyses, and I will cover these in very various different levels of detail. So I choose to focus on three searches that constrain the most natural models of SUSY. Those involved in the SOT or the Gluino and the LSP. Obviously the Higgsino is the most natural particle, but we have no searches for that. So I'll start with the 0 lepton 2 to 6 jets plus missing ET, and this is really the most basic analysis on Atlas, and it's the one that covers the kind of broadest spectrum of different models. Then there's an analysis which requires greater than or equal to 3 V jets and missing ET. And this search is for Gluino-mediated stop and spottums. And then there's a stop 1 lepton search, which is relatively recent. And then finally, I'll touch on the Z plus ET miss search, as this is the one that had an excess in that one. So the contents of the talk are here. So I'll start by setting the scene at the end of run 1, essentially. And then we did some projections prior to the start of run 2. And then we have the general strategy that the SUSY group decided to employ, because we had a big meeting about how we were going to have a cohesive strategy for 2015. And then the four searches that I just mentioned, briefly mention what the other six searches are, and then some conclusions. So, setting the scene. So, George nicely summarized run one results yesterday, so I'll be brief. So, firstly, in early 2010, the Tevatron Williamson colored particles were superseded. So, this is with 35 inverse picobarns. You can see the grey, the green and the orange is the Tevatron, and we smashed them out of the water in 2010. The search plan then expanded to cover the third generation and electroweak specific searches, and these are an example of a stop search and an electroweak search. And there was no evidence seen for SUSY in the data right through to the end of 2012, and this is a 0 lepton search, a 1 lepton search, and then an eight jet search from the high jet multiplicity. And therefore, we put strong limits on the Gluino and the light squarks, assuming they were degenerate. So this is a Gluino squark plane for various different LSP masses. This is the LSP versus the Gluino for a direct decay via two quarks. And you can see that the limit's at 1300 GeV. And this is the Gluino decaying through a single step, and there's still the limit is up at 1300 GeV when you combine the 0 and 1 lepton channels. And then we also explored many different stop scenarios. So this is the general stop plot that's been sent several times this week, where the stop decays to top plus LSP in the orange when it's kinematically allowed. We also looked at various cases where there was a Chargino in intermediate particle. And there was only one notable excess in Atlas, and this was in the Z plus ET miss search, and this was not confirmed by CMS, so they had very different cuts, but we know that they looked at the data. And so these are the plots for the EE plus mu mu channel in the MLL spectrum, the ET miss, and the HT. So, coming up to the start of run 2, we knew that run 2 increased the center of mass energy from 8 TeV to 13 TeV. And this results in a very large increase in the signal cross-section for the production of very heavy SUSY particles. The standard model backgrounds also increased, but not so much. And this means that in 2015, we expected higher sensitivity than the entirety of run 1. For heavy SUSY particles, that's the key. So if you have a 1.5 TeV Gluino, then it goes up by a factor of 46 in cross-section, whereas TT bar goes up by 3.3. So we did some projections. So we did projections for bottom squarks and Gluino sensitivity using MT simulation for Morion 2015. And internally, we also did some other searches. We did the squark searches, most notably. And it was clear from the projections that the prospects for the early discovery of the Gluino and the spottom were very good. And they were less good for the other particles. So the electroweak sector, the run 1 results were still going to be the most strong. And for squarks, again, we didn't expect huge increases. So most of the searches focused on the Gluino. So this is what the kind of take-home message for the end-of-year event results was. We searched for the Gluino and then the spottom as well. So the general strategy. We had a meeting just before, around this time in 2014, and we decided to focus on the signals which had the greatest discovery for the prospects in the early run 2 data. this was the Gleano, the Spottom, and to a lesser extent, the HiMAS stock with light LSP. And the analyses would follow closely the well-established strategies of the equivalent 1-1 analysis. The driving principle of the workshop was KIS, keep it simple. And this meant that we followed the run-one model of simple one-to-one correspondence between a control region and a major background and simple cut-and-count signal regions. And by the end of run-one, there were analyses that did some more complicated things, which are a little bit more similar to CMS. So there was a combined fit of several signal regions in the one lepton analysis, where they effectively did a shape across, I think, 7 signal regions. And then there was also a 2-lepton stop analysis that used an MVA technique. But we went back from these more complicated techniques to the very simple for run-two. And this was to hopefully be able to defend any significant EPSES that would be seen in the data. So moving on to the first of the 4 searches. So I chose to focus on the 0-lepton 2-6 search, as the PMSSM scan that we've heard a bit about showed that this search alone covered 89% of the included Beano or Higgsino LSP scenarios. So it covered about 90% of what we could exclude by just doing this one search and not bothering with the rest of the SUSE group. It therefore forms a key cornerstone of the LHC search program, and any proposed model to fit any anomaly, for example, has to respect the stringent limits of a search. So the search vetoes unreconstructed electrons and muons above 10 GeV. So the remaining irreducible standard model backgrounds are Z to neutrinos, W to tau nu, TT bar, semi-leptonic to hadronic taus, and small diboson contributions. There's no tau vetoes in any of the inclusive ATLAS analysis. In the stop analysis, they do, but in the inclusive ones, they don't. So we formed 7 different signal regions of various different multiplicities to provide good discovery significance for 3 different target models. So the 3 target models were, there was a Squark model, even though the sensitivity wasn't so good for this, so there was less effort put into it. Then there's the Gluino decaying to QQ bar plus the LSP. And then there's the Gluino going through a single step, Chargino to a W and QQ bar. So essentially 2 jets, 4 jets, more jets.
So your lost leptons is not just hadronic taus, right?
We do have some electrons and muons that are not identified, and particularly low PT. There are very few outside the ETA acceptance, just due to the way that physics works. But they're estimated in the same way. And the majority of the background is hadronic taus. So these are the 7 signal regions. So there are 3 2-jet signal regions, a 4-jet signal region, a 5-jet, 6-jet, and a 6-jet type. And the cuts involve cuts on the jet PT, the missing energy. Then there's the delta phi between the jets and missing energy. And between the delta phi cut and the ET miss over square root of HT or ET miss over M effective cuts, these reduce the QCD background to negligible levels. And then finally, we cut on the sum of the jets and the missing energy, this M effective variable. And the values we cut on are at least 1200 GeV for the really inclusive case, looking for the squarks. But mainly, they're around the 2 TeV or 1.5 TeV mark.
Is the planarity cut very useful?
The aplanarity cut actually, it was found to be reasonably useful for the models where there was a step in the decay, particularly, because they become more round as you have more different jets going in all different directions. Whereas the background, particularly the Z background, you tended to get a hard jet that fragmented into, or a hard parton that fragmented into to soft partons, so that the event is very
one direction. What is the critical efficiency of the cut that you
It's pretty efficient for the signal. I think they cut pretty loose on it. I'm trying to remember exactly what the distribution looks like.
90% or more.
I think it's 90% or more for signal. And then it cuts out 25% of the background. It's not a massive deal, but it helps.
The delta phi cut between all jets greater than 3 and ET miss, the second one of those that has the value of 0.2,
yeah.
How much does that do?
How much does it harm your signal?
And how much background does it get rid of?
So the background it gets rid of is QCD, so it's always very difficult to estimate exactly how much background it gets rid of. I believe it loses some signal, particularly in the one-step decay, in the Galeno to QQ plus LSP, it doesn't lose very much because there's only four jets normally. I don't know off the top of my head. I didn't work on this search.
That was the question.
Yeah.
Can you tell how much the difference in signal efficiency is roughly when you have mixed decays, like Mondolino decays via the Tachino and the other decays via the Neutralino in the simplified models that you had?
So we don't generate simplified models where the two branches go different ways.
But realistically, in realistic system scenario, this is very often the case.
Yes, that's true. But, I mean, this is the way we did it in run one, and then when we went to the whole full PMSSM, then we found that we still had good coverage for the Galeno searches. So we didn't find any reason to do it any differently.
I think for a lot of these, you should keep in mind, if you go buffed by a Neutralino 2 or a Chargino and you pop a W or a Z and that goes hadronically, it doesn't matter which one you went through. And so for a lot of the events that these guys are bringing up anyway,
I was just wondering about
the direct versus one step.
When you have mixed branches, like one goes for a Chachino and the other one goes directly into the Neutralino versus.
I see.
So then you end up with six jets rather than eight or four. And I think they're still pretty good at picking them up because we don't require eight jets ever. We're requiring six jets, and therefore the one-step decays tend to have extra jets, but in general, you tend to get an extra jet anyway. The five-jet region is actually designed for the direct decays, so the four-jet case, and then you've got an ISR jet due to the fact that you're producing 2 TeV worth of SUSY particles, so running the PDF up, you get an ISR jet.
So one of the biggest differences, I think, in this table from what we're doing is that your jet PT thresholds are much higher.
Yes.
Talk about the optimization for that.
So in general, the optimization was based on we took the limits from run one and essentially picked points that were just beyond well where the expected sensitivity was, and so I think there were three in each of the planes three times, so there were 9 points that we looked at, and then you'd run a full 2D scan over, a full n-dimensional scan over varying all these different variables to find the cuts of best significance. And then you'd see if this interpolated smoothly between the different regions to see if you were missing a bit in between where the sensitivity was lower. And we found that these helped a lot. Like increasing the leading jet PT, we require it for the trigger. Sometimes, yeah, we require it for the trigger, really. But the sub-leading jet PTs is from the optimization, and it was found to help a lot. Having them at 20 GV was useless compared to having them at 100.
I can see how at high mass splitting, it's going to help, where you have lots of Q. But at the more compressed regions, I wonder how much it starts to hurt you to put a 100 GeV cut on the subleading jet. So, but if you say it optimized well across the whole space?
Well, it was mostly in the high mass.
I mean, we're mostly focusing at the high mass for these searches.
I think also if you do compare your sensitivity in the compressed and ours, you guys tend to go higher.
Yeah, you guys tend to be better at semi-compressed, uncompressed things.
That's actually interesting because, so, I mean, we count just down to 40, 30, depending on the analysis, right? Mm-hmm. And so our 9 jet region is probably more comfortable than 6 jet or 5 jet region. Yeah. Counting is very different. Yeah.
There might be a typo in this table, though. I think the 5 and 6 jet is only 50 jet.
This one.
Those two.
Check your phone now.
We had the typo in the paper draft, which is not out yet. So.
Then no cut for the other bits.
No, but then everything else is 100.
Yeah.
Can I go back at that? So I'm being slow. Yeah. So you had the 2JM means 2 jets medium rather than Lucifer's type. Is that what this means?
Yeah. It's roughly due to the number of background events, but it's not strict.
And so, and that's the only place where you have a low jet multiplicity, a low jet PT cut.
Yes. So this one was a harder leading jet and a softer sub-leading jet. And I think...
So this sort of allows for some kind of asynchronous...
Yeah.
I mean, not asynchronous. asymmetric.
Sorry about that.
I'm the person
who looks at the title you present to the
No, no, it's the number of events that you end up in the signal region from the standard model processor that we end. So once we get to the final results, then like the first one has 264, 186, and 25. So it's
but what's changing?
The degree to which you're cutting. So it's like 1,200, 1,600.
Oh, okay.
Like you're effectively just cutting harder.
A bunch of those. All the cuts.
We change a whole lot of the cuts, but you end up with less events.
So you're just calling it loosely in
by... Yeah, because you're cutting harder into something. Into some part.
What is the number of jets on each column? So the two jet columns have exactly two jets of that kind.
Even
not perfectly matched.
So on the next slide, I think I've covered this bit. But then, each signal region is designed to be inclusive of higher jet multiplicities, and this is to maximize the signal acceptance. If you put on a veto on like anything more than something, then you lose signal, and you tend not to lose so much background. And note, the signal regions are not exclusive, so each signal region includes some of another signal region, but they're not totally inclusive either, so they don't contain the whole of the tighter signal region. And there's no attempt to combine the different signal regions. We just take the best one for each point in the plane when setting a limit, and we just look at each one individually to see if it has a significant excess. So therefore, we didn't need to make them either totally inclusive of each other or totally exclusive of each other to do any of these statistical tricks.
So every limit comes from a single bin?
Yes. So they were optimized with these specific models in mind, as run one was done, but this approach was found to adequately cover much of the general PMSSM parameter space as well, which kind of justifies the approach. So then going on to the background estimation. So the standard model backgrounds to the search are estimated using control regions enriched in each of the standard model processes, or one very similar. So the Z to neutrinos, similar to CMS, comes from a gamma plus jet selection. The W to lepton plus jets comes from a region requiring a lepton and no B jets, and the TT bar comes from a region requiring a lepton and having more than or equal to one B jet. For each signal region, there is therefore these three control regions, and a simultaneous fit is performed to the three control regions to account for contamination of backgrounds between the different regions and also contamination of signal into these control regions as well.
Sorry, what does that mean?
So we first do a background-only fit. So you take the Monte Carlo prediction in each of the control regions, plus the data in each of the control regions, and the Monte Carlo in the signal regions.
It's just counting, it's not shape.
It's just counting. And then you allow the normalization of each of the three backgrounds to vary, and it finds the values which give you the right normalization. But because there is contamination, it's not just simply moving the data to the Monte Carlo to the data in each one.
But, the first region, the gamma plus jets, doesn't have any W in top, first order.
Yeah, so it doesn't have any contamination, but the second two do.
The second two,
it's a simultaneous fit between
the two. And the way you select it,
you see the W and the TT bar on the bottom left plot.
Oh,
it's a couple percent.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, right.
And then the signal regions are chosen. So these control regions are chosen how?
So the control regions extrapolate a small amount in the phase space for W and TT bar, as well as over the lepton veto. So we count the lepton as a jet when we're performing them, and then they have the same cuts apart from they tend to have. I didn't put the full table in. They have slightly looser cuts. So they have a slightly looser M effective cut, for example, in most of them, so that they have a bit more statistics. And they're loosened such that the MC statistics is about half of the systematic error.
And for the signal regions with leptons, you do not put a transverse mass cut?
So this is a zero lepton signal.
Yeah, but you get signal contamination from one lepton through the events, right?
No, so there's an upper transverse mass cut.
There is an upper transverse mass cut.
Of 100 G. So there's an upper transverse mass cut and a lepton. It's very similar to what you do. And for the photons, they have exactly the same criteria as the signal region, because the photons have enough events that you don't need to loosen the cuts.
And then going from photon to Z, you're talking about
So for a photon to Z, we have a region where we look at Z to LL. It gives you an overall normalization of the photon to Z ratio. And then we apply that to the Monte Carlo, the photon Monte Carlo, and then we go from there. So a slide on systematic uncertainties.
Sorry, can I go back just one sec? So this fit is joint across these three control regions. So you're sort of trying to, you know, project out each one of the backgrounds and show that you understand it one at a time. So that on the left, it seems like there's a normalization issue at the very low end where...
So the cut's not been applied here. So this is the... Normal says on it. There are the four jet signal regions.
The fit doesn't have unitarity on counts.
So the fit has not been performed here.
It's not before. Fit. Okay.
It's just out of the box.
Yeah.
But it's not a fit to the shape.
No.
The fitting is three numbers and.
Cuts on this volume 2,200. So if we go back here, then essentially we integrate this part of the plot. And then put that into the fit, and then for these two, it will be slightly loosened. It's something like 2,000, and therefore we integrate this part, and we integrate this part, and then we put those three numbers for signal and background into the fit.
But the fit is three numbers from Monte Carlo plus.
Three numbers from data for, obviously the Monte Carlo has contamination, and then they come out with three normalization parameters. So it's the number of. Inputs is the same as the number of normalization parameters.
Chris, is this the for each of the bins on the previous slide separately?
Yeah, so it's completely separate from each one. So for every signal region, we have a mu top, so like a signal strength for top, and a signal strength for W, and a signal strength for Z.
So the biggest conceptual difference to what Frank showed is that CMS would argue that the electron is electron. So losing electron in W, so TD bar is no difference.
Yes. So that's one conceptual difference. The way we handle the signal contamination is a bit different. So when you're setting a limit, I think that's... Because we have the signal coming into this when we do an exclusion fit. So if you want to see if there's a signal, we put the signal into each of these control regions as well. So that
is this not done in CMS?
That's one question I wanted to ask. You had
simultaneous fit control regions and signal regions, and for others we would take the it is a reduced efficiency on the signal contamination.
And we don't separate lost leptons and hadronic tanks. So we separate W and Z, and you separate lost lepton and hadronic tank. So that's the kind of conceptual way we do it compared to the way you do it.
And we are not applying a track veto.
Yeah, we're not applying a track veto, so almost all our background is hadronic tanks.
Yes.
So the systematic uncertainties then enter as nuisance parameters in this fit. So essentially we apply the jet energy scale and it changes the shapes of the distributions, and you look at how the number of events in each control region and signal region moves up and down. And so you end up with a whole lot of different nuisance parameters in your fit. And then the other uncertainty is on the normalization mu factors from it, which kind of captures the statistical uncertainty in the control regions.
So you do have some sort of tau veto, or you do have none?
None.
Okay, fine.
That's the tau.
And then I understand why you.
It was studied quite a bit actually, and I was always pushing myself for this, but in the end, the gain was not so. It looks like some obvious thing to do, but when it was really run through the full analysis, it turned out that the gain is actually not so big. It's different from the hadronic. If you look at the fully hadronic stop search, there it really makes a big difference. But in these inclusive searches, it was found that it didn't make any huge difference, actually.
Okay. Some, but it's not huge. Half of them are out of acceptance anyway. The meter does nothing about that.
Right.
So it's a fraction of a fraction. Kind of.
And you lose some signal as well?
Yeah, because the signal has a lot of jets.
2 to 7% or depending on the model. Less in... depends on the multiplicity and whether or not there's beam.
So in the fully hydraulic direct stop search, there is a tau
meter. And in the one left on the stop search.
I think the tau meter is something we need to revisit because I think we have a looser, we have more tau IDs which are more targeted for vetoes now that we didn't have in one.
I think that's an interesting point too, because if we just took our tau IDs off the shelf from other people who looked at taus, you know, for their livelihood, it didn't look that good. It's really the sort of isolated track veto and track isolation that
you want something very efficient
to help. Yeah.
I think our efficiency maximum is 40%. So the systematic uncertainties. So this is the table of the systematic uncertainties for each of the seven different signal regions. And the total background is also listed at the top. And so for the tightest signal regions, so this is the four jet tight, the six jet medium, the six jet tight, which have the lowest signal region counts, it's these mu Z plus jets, for example, and mu W plus jets, which have the largest component of the uncertainty. And these are essentially saying that when we cut very tight, the control regions lose statistics, and therefore you end up with the largest component of your systematic error coming from the control region statistics. For the regions which are looser, then it turns out to be the theory. So we have theory Z, where we're comparing Sherpa and Madgraff Z Monte Carlos, and then there's the Di boson theory, where we assumed a flat 50% uncertainty on Di boson theory, and this dominates, but this is being improved on using additional samples for 2016. It's also nice to note that these are the jet ET miss systematics. This is the jet energy scale and jet energy resolution and the missing ET soft term uncertainties. And these are very small compared to the other uncertainties. And where you do see them getting to like 10%-ish level, then you also note the MC statistics is at the 10%-ish level. So maybe that's dominated by MC statistics. Where we have a lot of statistics, they're at the 1% level. So we're not dominated by the experimental uncertainties.
Theory W, say this is the uncertainty on the, we'll call it a translation factor between the W control region and your signal.
Yeah.
And it also has the uncertainty going from, say, the W control region to the top control region?
It has, most of it comes from the change in generator. So you change the generator, and then you have a nuisance parameter, which is the difference between the two generators that can go in either direction. So you say, my default generator is Sherpa. My alternative is Madgraff, and Madgraff says that I would have more events in the control region and a little bit more events in the signal region, and therefore you have this kind of nuisance parameter which can move things up like that or down like that.
But it also moves those regions between control regions
as well, yeah. So it can say, okay, more of the time we have W plus a B jet, and therefore there's more W in the top control region, for example.
So what are the statistical uncertainties on the Monte Carlo out in the bins where it starts to become large? Say, let's just pick the last column.
So 9%.
And of the 11, 10, 6% for the theory uncertainties, how much of, what are the corresponding?
So for when we have a 10%?
No, sorry, in the very last column.
Oh, in the very last column?
Yeah, is how much overlap is there in that 11% for theory W and just the Monte Carlo statistics?
This region is dominated. It's probably this 11 probably has quite a large Monte Carlo statistics component to it. It's not the same as this 9 because this will be dominated by the alternative generators Monte Carlo statistics.
And I'm missing the data statistics in the control region in this table.
So these are almost essentially captured by these mu parameters. The mu parameters capture how pure your control region is and the statistics within it. So if you have low statistics in your photon plus jet control region, then you get to this 11%.
Yes.
For the W in the top, it's a bit more complicated because they have uncertainties due to the fact you can move top up and W down. And therefore the purity comes in to their uncertainty as well. But the Z one is pretty much the control region.
So effectively all of your control region have fairly large statistics. You have no low statistics control region because none of this is higher than 30%, 40%.
That's because the control regions opened up the cuts a bit.
They opened up the cuts a bit, but this is the percentage on the total.
Yeah.
predicted background. So if half the background is top, then this is a 14%.
Ah, okay, gotcha. Okay.
So no significant excess or deficits were seen from the fitted predictions. However, you can see some large normalization correcting factors, particularly for TT-bar. So these are our seven regions again. And we published the Monte Carlo raw expected events and then the events after the fit. So if you divide the two, then you can see, for example, if we take TT-bar in, the five-jet region, then the Monte Carlo would predict 2.7 events. However, after the fit, we see 1.4 events. So we've scaled things down by a factor of two. And then we have the total background events and the number of observed events, and you can see that everything is in agreement.
In the 1.4 and the 3.3, for example, the WJIT for TT-bar would be correlated, right?
So the 1.4 and 3.3, the uncertainties on these can be anti-correlated. So if you move one up, the other one down.
Yes.
Yeah. So these numbers will not add in quadrature to this number.
Yeah, but not hugely, because your control regions are not...
If the control regions are pure enough, then the correlation is broken. So then this is it displayed graphically, which is nice.
Did you tell us what happened with signal contamination in the control regions?
So the fit I described before is what we do to see if we see a signal. So you take the three control regions and you don't put the data in the signal region into the fit. What we do when we want to exclude something is we take the signal model, and then we now have four regions. We have our three control regions and the signal region. And we put in the signal yield in all four regions with a mu parameter of one. You then run the fit, allowing the mu parameter to move up and down. And therefore, you have all the contamination in the control regions and the signal region, and you have the data in the signal region too. And therefore, the fit will find that the mu parameter goes to zero, and you can exclude the point. Or the fit says the mu parameter can still be free to be near one, and therefore you don't exclude the point. So when you do the fit, you have the full... You're essentially saying, does nature look like signal plus background?
For models where you have a lot of signal contamination, effectively your control regions become other signal regions as well.
No, it's more that if you have lots of signal, then it allows the fit allows the you can't exclude the point because it says okay, well we could have signal, and it looks like it's just higher in the control region and the signal region, and we move the top down. And say we move the top normalization down, and we still have the signal at full strength. And this kind of makes up for the deficit in the control.
If a transient factor is different enough, the fit would be able to tell between the two.
Between the two, yeah. So if it's different enough, then you can tell. But if the signal looks like TT bar, then it just moves the two between. Whereas if you don't do a simultaneous fit and you just take the background-only prediction, then you say, oh, we expect masses of signal in the signal region, and I can exclude it, whereas actually the contamination is very important.
So putting it differently, there's no built-in knowledge of the absolute scale of what is expected in the control region.
Yes, for any of TT-bar, W plus jets, Z, or signal. They're all free to float completely to any value.
They're not.
So for the rare processes, particularly Di boson, then they come straight from Monte Carlo and they have their normalization that can move up and down, but we don't allow them to move outside their uncertainties in the fit. In fact, they stay at the same value because the fit doesn't have more bins than three parameters. So moving on to the second search. In the case of minimal natural models, it is usual for the gluino to decay through third generation squarts, either when they're on shell or off shell. If you just have a gluino and you have third generation squarts around and then you have an LSP, then the gluino will decay through the squarts, even if they're just slightly heavier than it, to decay through off shell versions. And this generates very distinctive signals in the detector because there are four BJs in the final state. There's also large missing energy in the case of gluing out TT bar plus the LSP. There's leptons and potentially hadronic tops that you can reconstruct. And selections involving greater than or equal to 3 B jets are very powerful at reducing the standard model background. In particular, TT bar, because you move from a situation where you have 2 B jets from the TT bar system to where you're requiring an ISR or FSR B jet or a mistyped jet. And therefore, a dedicated search is performed for these signatures, optimizing in the 2 simplified models. And this is performed in both the 0 and 1 lepton channels for the first case, in the TT bar case, and obviously, and for the second case where there's no leptons in the 0 lepton channel. And we separate these in the Atlas-SUSY group from the other inclusive searches because we think that the standard model backgrounds are hard to model for in this case where we're looking at ISR B jets in addition to the normal process. So after selecting events with missing energy and greater than equal to 3 B jets, the standard model background is dominated by TT bar with some contributions from TT bar plus vector prism. The signal region optimization is therefore based around using the TT bar event kinematics to reduce this background. So firstly, we have the general kinematics of the event, which is done in the same way as in the other search, where we just have the M effective variables, which are basically the sum of the stuff in the event. And then we start looking at the kinematics of a TT bar system. So if you have a 1 lepton signal region, the obvious thing to require is a high transverse mass, because that gets rid of your semi-leptonic TT bar background. So the transverse mass is required to be greater than 150 GeV for all the 1 lepton regions. For semi-leptonic TT bar, we also use the following variable. So this is the transverse mass between the B jets and the missing energy. We'll see there should be some closed brackets here. And you take the minimum over all 3 B jets. So you take each of the 3 B jets, each of the leading 3 B jets, and you work out the transverse mass with the missing energy. And in the case of semi-leptonic TT bar, this is bounded by the top mass, even if you haven't found the lepton. And for the signal, it peaks at higher levels. And then for the 0 lepton regions, there is also a delta phi jet ET mist applied to reduce the jet mist measurement background. Finally, trimmed large R reclustered jets are used to tag boosted tops in some of the regions.
How much does that help in the end?
A tiny bit. It's not a killing cut that kind of saves the analysis. So going on to the background estimation.
Okay. Sorry, I missed it. What's the PT threshold on your jets for this one? Are you still at very high numbers?
I think we're at 30 now.
30.
Or maybe 40.
It's 30. Okay, much lower.
40. Yeah. 30. Brian says 30. So other than TT bar, the estimation comes straight from Monte Carlo because these are the small processes that don't contribute much to the search. For the TT bar background, we form control regions. And these are formed requiring a lepton for the 0 lepton regions with a reversed MT cut. And also, for the 1 lepton analysis, we have a 1 lepton control region with a reversed MT cut. In the 0 lepton analysis, the kinematic cuts are relaxed to increase the control region statistics. So this is reducing the ET miss cut and the M effective cut. And so you're extrapolating over the event kinematics.
Are you asking for 3 B jets?
Yes, we ask for 3 B jets. While in the 1 lepton analysis, it's this cut that we remove. The MT B jets min cut is removed. For systematics, we compare Powhead box to AMC at NLO and also change the shower between Pythia 6 and Herwig++ for Powhead, and alongside coherent variations in the scale between the matrix elements and part and shower. The detector-related systematics...
Wait a second. This Monte Carlo is used to go from your control region to the signal region. So just to make a...
It's the extrapolation.
To make this transfer back.
Yeah.
And how big of a difference do this to Monte Carlo's make?
So they make a bit of a difference. The systematics from the theory are larger than the experimental ones. And the experimental ones, you have the jet energy scale. Obviously, if you're extrapolating over an M effective spectrum, then it's a falling spectrum. So you end up with a residual jet energy scale uncertainty. And then also V-tagging related systems.
How far are you extrapolating? How many events do you typically have in the signal, in the control region, and how many events do you have in the signal region? Just to get a sense.
So you can see the extrapolation here. So this is the 0 lepton G, the 4 jet ones. So 4 jets with 3B jets. So for the signal region, we have cuts of 350 in ETMIS, control region 250, M effective 1600, M effective 1200. So that would probably give you a factor of 4 to 8 or something.
Remember, right, the control regions were targeting about 10 events, except the high stat. Well, and the signal regions is typically one event.
Yeah, it's like 10 events in the control region, 1 to 2 events in the signal region.
So half to one order of magnitude extrapolation.
Yeah. In 2D.
Yeah.
Can you tell us where you're operating in terms of BTAG efficiency versus fake rate?
So the efficiency, this search used the 70%, 77%, oh no, the 85%. We went right up to the 85. We have a 70, a 77, and 85% efficiency working points. The 85% working point has a rejection factor of almost 100, I think, for light jets.
That's the idea.
It's a big improvement from that. Yeah, that's way better than CMS.
I think that's right. Yeah, Zach will tell me how wrong I am in a minute. The rejection factor is like 300 for 70%.
Right? 89% efficiency at
1%.
85%. But they had this IBL, and I don't know if that made a huge difference.
Very impressive.
It's a factor of 2 improvement, the IBL.
Yeah.
The IBL was supposed to be a big deal, so it might be a big deal.
We also retrained the B-tagging algorithms quite extensively in the shutdown. So while Zach is working out how wrong I am about B-tagging efficiencies, so these are the signal regions for the GBB. So all of them have the delta phi cut. All of them have, and then the large mass splitting, high PT jet, missing energy above 350 and 1600 M effective. Moderate mass splitting, slightly less cut on M effective, slightly harder cut on ET miss. Small mass splitting, same-ish style as this one, but with lower jet PT cuts to pick up the additional jets. For the when you're going to the top case, then again there's 3 different signal regions for large, medium, and small mass splittings. And for large mass splittings, we can see the number of top candidates comes in. And interestingly, they require this to be greater than or equal to 1. So even the background, because it's DT bar, should have a hadronic top in it. But they find that requiring 1 hadronic top in the signal is beneficial because the efficiency of tagging these things is not that high. This is also applied in the moderate mass splitting, but it isn't applied for the small mass splitting because there's not so much boost on the signal. Then there's the 1 lepton regions, which again requires for a 1 hadronic top for the large mass splitting and no requirement for the moderate mass splitting.
What background is that hadronic top requirement rejecting?
So it's rejecting TT bar just by the inefficiency of the top tag because you have potentially up to 3 or 4 tops from the signal, which you're tagging with some efficiency, and they're higher PT than the ones from the background, and therefore you'd require 1 of them, but most of the time you don't tag one from the back.
It's a 300 GB PT cut, right?
There's a 300 GB cut. It's a large R trimmed mass cut with 300 GB with over 100 GB of mass. So it's a very loose tag. It's just the mass we cut on, and it above 100 GV, and the jet has to be above 300 GV, and it's formed from a collection of anti-KT4 jets into an anti-KT1 jet.
That's efficient for the non-compressed signal models, but do you lose efficiency as you go to the very compressed?
So for the compressed ones, there it's not applied.
Oh, I see.
So the number of tops is required in the moderate mass splitting, but for the compressed ones, it's not.
But how many KT4 jets are you asking for here? In the case where the large mass splitting where you tag the top.
So we always require there to be 7 in the event. Okay, but then we don't require there to be any in the jet. We just require the mass of the jet to be above 100.
I'm just wondering how much asking for that top jet buys you. So, I mean, you're talking about like the difference in efficiency, right, between the chance to tag 4 and the chance to tag 1 in the background. Can't you also make up some of that just by asking for more
either more 8K4 jets or higher PT 8K4 jets, as opposed to, you know, what's directly coming from this top tag and what discriminates?
I mean, tagging, it's a very loose definition. It's just a large R mass, a large R jet with a mass above 100. There's no substructure involved, no number of prongs involved. So you can't really make it more efficient because there's not much else. You trim it slightly to get rid of pile-up jets. But you can't make it more efficient because it doesn't have any more cuts.
Your main background is that lepton to go out, right?
The zero lepton, it's semi-leptonic TT bar. In the other one, it's dileptonic TT bar with hydronic tag.
And do you have a top tag?
Yeah, there's a top requirement on it.
I'm just asking this because we looked into the same thing for our hydronic search and found that just asking for, say, 9 jets or 10 AK4 jets was much more valuable, or at least as valuable as asking for a fat jet and simpler. But, I mean, this is also in some ways more interesting, too.
Yeah, I mean, in run one, in the high jet multiplicity search, they looked at jet substructure, but it didn't seem to add anything, and they were already cutting at 10
right.
jets.
And your two requirements are completely independent. So if I could have 2 AK4 jets that make my 1 AK8 bad jet.
Yeah.
And that's just fine.
Yeah, I mean, you'd hope there were 3 from the top. but there's no requirement for there to be 3. If there's only 1, then it's highly unlikely to have a mass above 100.
The point of this one is also a little less. I mean, once you start to get very high mass, the top starts to get boosted.
Yeah, they come together and you should find
the fat jet should be slightly better than just counting. I'm not sure we're really at that level yet. That's one of the iterations in 1.2 was to go for this one.
This is the idea that as you go higher and higher in gluon mass, everything becomes more boosted and collimated, and therefore you can group it into the right. How wrong was I about B-tagging efficiency?
Factor 3.
30
is a rejection of 30-ish. 30 to 4.
Okay.
What is it for 77 and 70?
So it's 10 and 30.
For 85, it's
10 and 30.
That's
good. They also depend on what they mean by 70.
70, we're at 200.
Factor 70 is 200.
I think it's
100.
So no significant excess was seen in this search. So the optimal signal region across the plane is used for exclusion. So for every point on the plane, we find the signal region that would expect to exclude the point the best, and we see if it's excluded or not. And this gives us these two curves. And then additionally, from Orient, the 0 and 1 lepton signal regions with the best sensitivity in the GTT plane were combined. So therefore, we have 2 signal regions trying to exclude each point, one with 0 leptons and one with 1. And that gives you this plane. So you can see by moving from here to here, we're moving from just over 1600 to just under 1700. So there's a 50 GeV gain or so by combining the 0 and 1 lepton channels. So the third search is a stop 1 lepton search. So searches involving the stop require a more targeted approach, as we've been hearing. And the sensitivity to the run 2 data is very close to that from run 1. So, however, there were further studies of the various backgrounds and improved techniques that have allowed this search to improve on the run 1 sensitivity. So there are 2 different models that are used for optimization, even though this is a stop search. So the first one is the classic stop decay, to stop to top plus LSP. And the second one is the gluino decaying to the stop plus a top, and then the stop decaying to soft things plus the LSP by making the delta between the stop and the LSP about 10 GeV. So this is trying to emulate the kinematics of the first case, but provide a higher cross-section. So these models look very similar because they both have top plus missing energy, but the second case has about 50 times the cross-section. So we define 3 signal regions, 2 of them targeting this scenario and 1 of them targeting this scenario. The signal regions make extensive use of kinematic variables to reconstruct the TT bar system in kind of the way.
Sorry, can I go back one slide? What I'm curious, what kind of, in your signal generation, what kind of grid granularity do you have?
It's normally 50 or 100 GeV in either direction.
What do we have? What is the granularity in those, for the grid?
The signal granularity points.
I think it's 50 and 25.
Because I think ours is 150.
How many?
No, just it's square for 50 by 50.
25 plus the diagonal.
And how many signal SUSE events did you guys generate?
So, it's normally 50,000 per point, I think,
in this
one.
In the total program, I'm just curious.
In the total program.
Do we have the PMSSM or not?
The general rule is that when they request a grid, you're not allowed more than 1 million. So most grids are about 800,000. GTT, like GTT, T4, a million.
That 1 million.
Per point?
No,
the whole grid.
Some are a couple of million.
Yeah, some are a couple of million, but never more.
20,000 per, you only get 20 points for the whole scan?
So I think GTT might be 2 million, but we don't have any over here. We only have them in this region.
So just to give you a sense, for the strong SUSE for run one, CMS generated 1.6 billion SUSE events.
I think
you guys are generating a factor of 100.
2016, yeah. Atlas will generate 3 billion events for the whole collaboration of all processes.
But I think we've recognized this, right? I mean, a lot of our exclusion curves look pretty ratty.
Yeah.
We're always impressed with how beautiful.
No, I mean, yours look a lot smoother.
Well, this one is a bad example, but.
But there is a lot of smoothing involved in making these curves.
I know, there's a lot of dirt in the screen. I know. But, you know, we use the fast simulation, which is a factor of, what is it, 50?
Yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
So right now we're in the process of regenerating the Monte Carlo for 2016, and the SUSE request 2 billion events of SUSE events, right?
Yeah.
So you don't use any kind of filter, for example. I mean, what's the reason to use? I mean, especially in certain, maybe not in this one, but I mean, in many other cases where you know that, for instance, you need to have the ISR jets, or you have certain missing T, and there are not many choices of analysis that you can use. I mean, of course, you can use some filtering. I mean, why do you have to generate by definition events?
Because we can. It doesn't require thinking.
Yeah.
The very compressed stuff was filtered in one. The stuff that was stopped at the diagonal, mm-hmm. The stuff that ended up in the
For those we also have 1 million for one single point.
Diagonal kind of things. There were some.
We're not filtering any there.
Yeah. We're not filtering any.
This time around, maybe not. Yeah.
I think that I want to be a little bit more precise on that number. For the SUSE samples that we have generated for MC15, I think that the total, including Atlas Fast 2, full simulation, etc., is a little bit less than 100 million. It's not so. So with respect to you, it's a factor of 10. And in these 100 million, so there is a lot of thinking about filtering, etc., in order to not waste CPU. Having said that, this is a question that I would want to ask to the management. I don't understand why your budget seems to be much larger than our budget.
That's because fast sim is fast.
Yes,
fast, our disk space is run out if we do this.
And that's because we have very compressed. How many kilobytes per event?
500.
400. Yeah,
25, 30.
Yeah.
So it's like they go straight to.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's the main difference. We have more concerns in terms of disk space, CPU, and etc.
So that's interesting. So you, for all of these, you're using the MiniOD, which are
for all analysis. We're now using MiniOD, and it's Well, it was 25,000 last time I see it. 25K, but I think now it's 40K.
This is really, I mean, this was developed during the shutdown, right?
Right.
And this has really picked on, so people are very inspired.
Because we keep the full AOD for all signal and all background. Yeah. So there's
We keep the AOD, but we put it on tape.
What's wrong with the color?
I think we do,
But everybody for analysis uses mini OD. I mean, 95% of the collaboration.
I think we keep the AOD for signal switches.
It just isn't replicated.
Yeah, it doesn't come out of the case. It just stays in the case.
But majority of the events that we have are like gluing onto a pair of dots. What we call T14T. I think that's
the this is the T14, what we call it.
Yeah. So, and the stop pair production. So what filters do you use there? That's the majority of this.
Well, there is a lot. I mean, there is a bias filter. I mean, HT filter, missing T filter.
But not for this grid.
Not for these ones, probably, yes.
So for T1, that one is 100 million.
You use 100 million in a squared list.
I'm interested to see the number of events you generate per point, because a lot of the arguments are the cross-section isn't that big, we're only going to get a few ember sample bars of data. You don't need 400 times the data.
Exactly.
It's a nice
plot,
right?
Yeah, for the, if we can afford, we generated 50 inverse. So this was intended to cover the needs of the whole 2016, for example.
And most of 2017, I guess. It's 50.
Yeah. I mean, there is a cap. Okay. So as soon as you hit, say, 1 million events, you don't.
But could you also say something about how you get a factor 50 improvement in time compared to full simulation? I mean, what are the shortcuts you're taking?
It's just a lot of parameterization of different detector effects. I mean, you basically don't simulate everything in the event.
There's no GM involved at all in the fast simulation.
There's no GM at all.
No GM at all. So because our tracking is the same in fast simulation.
The tracking is different. There's no actual scoring of each individual hitting the trajectory. There's a lot of parameterizations involved.
So even the reconstruction is faster.
Reconstruction is
faster. There's no hits, right?
No, except for the tracking carriers.
Because our fast simulation gives an output that looks like a full simulation that is then reconstructed the same way as a full simulation.
Yes.
It gives you all the track hits and then it fits all the tracks.
I think that there is no comparison between basic. We cannot really call the fast simulation that we have like their fast simulation.
Ours is a factor of 10 to 20 faster than the full simulation.
Yes.
The one that we're developing, which will be more like what it sounds like you have, will be order factor of 100 faster than what we have now.
Ours is
20.
Yeah, but our
how fast is your full simulation?
Factor of 10 faster than theirs.
It's not, but it's a factor of a couple faster. But I promise. When you get to apples to apples, it's really quite similar.
Fast
more similar
the
than
why there's numbers in many years. I remember in the beginning of run one, it was a huge difference, and then you guys worked on that.
So we did it in great detail. The last comparison that we did was like 2010, I think, and we really went down. And in the end, there was 20% that I couldn't explain, but everything else, it was just a couple of choices here and there, and then you get up to a factor of like 2.5. And then the rest was just differences in
exactly. If what they call full simulation has frozen showers everywhere, then
so does what we call full simulation. And it's not everywhere for them. It's above 2.5 for us. It's above 3.2.
Okay. Yeah.
So to give you a sense, at 30 pile up, where did you recall it? So for 30 pile up, the did you recall is takes more time than the simulation.
For what kind of event?
Your typical key bargain.
I don't remember the number offhand. I think it's more like 100 for us. But
I mean, many of these numbers were discussed because, I mean, unfortunately, the presentation from the CMS doesn't include many. I mean, even if it was discussed locally, but they don't include a lot of numbers actually. But I mean, we did have this back-to-back comparison at the Atlas Monte Carlo CMS Monte Carlo workshop in January, and I mean, it's clear that certain facts are clear, certain differences are clear.
So maybe then just to conclude on this, for the background processes, are you using FullSim always, yes, or are always FullSim?
The background, it turns out that SUSE is the only group that uses the fast simulation.
Huh? Is that exact?
Is that exact? What did you ask?
Exact.
No.
They don't do scans as much.
They don't do scans.
I'm thinking about using it now because Dirk can understand the final lines.
And BSM hits, they don't use it. I mean, for us, I think that the BSM hits is one of the...
One really, I mean, sorry, but now we know that the next talk is after the... So. one big issue is that using FastSim creates lots of work for the performance groups because they have to redetermine all the scale factors again for fast simulation. It's not exactly, although the fast simulation is actually pretty good, it's still, you have to use different scale factors, different surfaces.
Yeah, so that's not that much work. In fact, right now with the SUSE group takes care of them.
Okay. So you have dedicated, so basically for your background process and for your second process, you have different jet energy scales.
And the SUSE group derives all the scales and the uncertainties for the fast simulation.
Yes. Except for BTEC.
Except for BTEC group, for sure.
That's a slight difference in approach. I like it.
It's a very interesting approach.
But it's a bit difficult because now what's happening in the collaboration is that since only SUSE is using it, the development and the keeping up of the old fast simulation package is getting a little bit shaky.
SUSE inherited it.
But yes, SUSE inherited it. Right?
So Exotica does not use fast simulation?
No. And I don't think there's a particular reason for it. They should.
They're considering
using it.
And I guess one reason maybe because they're using a lot of boosted objects now. And maybe, I mean, for us at least, the fast simulation, if you go really into the gritty details of the substructure, it doesn't really
matter. There are some analysts that are starting using boosted objects, and it's not so bad, actually. Yeah. I mean, you guys are starting to use it, right?
Yeah, they showed a person for the top tigers, and the scale factors were quite small.
Okay.
Yeah, for our boosted objects, the Jet ETMS group will not support fast simulation at the moment. So the searches that, like this one, that involve boosted objects still use full simulation. So this grid is full simulation, and this is the GBB grid, which doesn't have any substructure, and that's fast simulation. So this grid, every point took several minutes to generate. Every event.
And how many events total does Atlas simulate for
7 billion a year?
How many?
About 7 billion a year.
No, but total, I mean, 2015, 5 billion a year.
So. 5 billion. So similar to us in terms of full sim.
Those are
7 billion.
It's about
7
billion a year, but 5
is about 7. Yeah. So 5 is 7. We have a lot of samples that are used for systematic uncertainties for the CPE, I mean, for the giants, etc. So these
are recode, not re-simulation.
I also like to include in that number the events that we throw away.
Once we get
that's a time.
All right. Sorry, this was a side.
It's a bit of a side track. So, what was I talking about? Oh yeah, we have three signal regions, two of them for the stop model, and then one of them for where we're looking for an even more boosted system, effectively, of high PT tops plus missing energy. And because this is a very targeted search, they used a lot of different kinematic variables. A lot of them are from the phenomenology literature to try and reconstruct or reduce the TT bar background. So this is a table you can almost certainly not read. But for example, this is signal region 1, signal region 2, signal region 3. So signal region 1, which is looking for the high mass stop near the bottom axis of the plot for stop versus LSP. We have cuts on four jets, ETMIS, HT, and MT. which are kind of standard. And then we go into the kind of theory side of variables. So there's AMT2, which is the asymmetric MT2 variable, which looks at a B jet, the two B jets and the ET miss, and does a partitioning between them to try and adding the lepton as well information to try and reconstruct the top system. There's the topness to see how much the event looks like a top. There's MT tau, where you look for a tau candidate, and if you see a tau candidate, you require the MT to be less than a certain value. There's the delta R between a B jet and a lepton, the delta R between the two B jets, and then the number of B tags creating one. So these are all different variables that are applied. And there's a different set of variables for each of the signal regions because they're really kind of trying to zoom in on the signal. So how do we estimate the background after doing all these cuts? So the significant backgrounds are dileptonic TT bar, because the semi-leptonic TT bar is killed by the MT cut, TT bar plus vector boson, small W plus jets background, and then the Di boson backgrounds. So the Di boson background is from Monte Carlo, but all the rest of them have appropriate control regions now. And then the full background estimation is validated in several regions enriched in TT bar and W plus jets. And then dileptonic validation regions are used to monitor the modeling of additional jet activity as well. So this is a little picture of the AMT2 versus MT plane. So we have the signal region is sitting over here and expands up this way. We then have the top control region, which has low AMT2 and low MT. If we then go to NB jets equals zero, in the same region we have the W control region. There's then the validation regions, which are slightly higher in MT, but still have low AMT2. So this is looking at now dileptonic events. We then have the number of B jets greater than 2 and high MT2 and low MT. And this gives you a relatively pure single top control region, which I'll talk about a bit more in later. And then down here, we have a region requiring a photon, which I'll talk about. So the single top background. So isolating a relatively pure single top sample in the phase space similar to the signal region is challenging. And this is new this time round. This is never done in run one. So the number of B jets separates WT from W plus jets. That's fairly obvious. This is the WT over W plus jets. And for zero B jets, it's very low. One B jet, two B jets, we're now above one for WT over W plus jets. Then this AMT2 variable, where you take a B jet plus a lepton, and then you take the other B jet, you try both pairs, you then form the MT2 of these two systems to try and find the minimum mass that could be used to construct that thing, and it should have an endpoint at the top mass, is used here. So this is the AMT2 variable, and you can see the semi-leptonic and dileptonic top here, and you can see that the top drops off very rapidly at the top mass. And then you can see that the single top doesn't respect this bound because the mass between the B jet and the W in the ISR B jet effectively in the W can be higher than the top mass. And so the single top has a tail out here. And then also the delta R between the two B jets can be large in the single top system because the B jet can be effectively more forward. And therefore that is used again to try and find a relatively pure region. So after all these kinematic cuts, we end up with a control region that's quite statistically limited at the moment, but it gives good prospects for making this prediction very accurate in the future.
How pure do you get?
I think it's about 60% single top. And obviously there's a top control region that goes in this fit that's all simultaneously done, so the top normalization is fixed by the top one, and therefore you end up with a relatively good control. So then the other background, which we've never had a control region before for, is TT bar plus vector boson, which is mainly TT bar plus Z to neutrinos. And TT bar plus Z to leptons has too low a cross-section for it to be useful. So here we look at TT bar plus gamma, in a similar way that in the zero lepton searches we do gamma plus jets to Z plus jets. Here we do TT bar plus gamma to Z plus gamma. So for high PTZ, the diagrams for TT bar plus Z and TT bar plus gamma are similar. But unlike Z plus jets, we can't get the normalization, the ratio Z over gamma from the dileptonic control region. So instead, we use the theory. So the NLO theory from Sherpa and AMC NLO was used. And this was computed for different PT vector bosons. And this was quite nice because we got the Sherpa authors to do the Sherpa one, and we could do the AMC NLO one ourselves. And you could compute the ratio at NLO between these two processes as a function of the PT of the vector boson to check that it was stable, and when you move to a more extreme kinematic regime, it didn't deviate too much.
What kind of an uncertainty do you end up claiming on that?
I think it was about 15-20%.
It's not large.
It wasn't huge. It was 15-20% on the ratio.
Yeah.
And this is the first time that TT bar plus gamma has been used to control this process. And again, we're quite statistically limited. Here's the MT with the photon added to the missing T. So there's the cut applied. And you can see that there's not a huge number of events on the plot. But again, when we have the 2016 data, this looks a really promising way to nail down this background.
So, Frank, can you remind me why we punted on this when we started?
We didn't have statistics.
Mm-hmm. But we used it. No,
I mean, in RUN 1, this was used as a validation regime.
It was used as a validation regime. It was the first time that we've used it to actually provide the central value. We also had to make sure that the Monte Carlo is with the same PDF for the two processes and set up the same way. It's quite a nice. So then we look at the validation regions. So in this plot, we have the top and W validation regions for the three different signal regions. And you can see that everything is in good agreement. And then the signal region predictions. And then this is when we require two leptons and low MT2, such that you get rid of the signal. So this is one electron, one muon, and one lepton and one tau. And you can see, again, there's good agreement of the predictions. And you can also see the signal region here. So three signal regions, and we have two signal regions that are perfectly spot on, and one that shows a small discrepancy. So there is this small discrepancy, but it's not particularly significant. We see 12 events versus 5.5 plus minus 0.7. And this is just some distributions from the signal region. So this is ET miss. We cut here. You can see there's a few more events here, and then everything seems to line up. This is the MT distribution. And you can see that they're not right at the boundary, but they're a bit beyond it. So then we set the limits. And so this is the Galeno model, and the red limit is the observed. And then in the stop model, obviously we have these two regions, one of which was targeting the kind of intermediate area here, and the other one which was targeting the very boosted scenario. The very boosted scenario saw the same events that they expected, and therefore you draw this exclusion. The rest of this area was from the signal region that saw the excess, and therefore the observed limit lies below. And when we do this procedure of having best signal regions, then you expect to have these disjoint regions where suddenly you jump from here to here because you move between the best expected region being signal region 1 to signal region 2. And you can compare this plot to this plot, and you can see that before, it was about 720 GeV, was the highest excluded mass when you combined the 0 and 1 lepton channel, and now we're at 770. Up here, there's no improvement because we saw this excess, and only a small expected improvement. Finally, the Z plus missing ET search. So George talked to you yesterday about this one, and it saw an excess in run 1. And therefore, the strategy was to keep the selection almost identical for the initial run 2 result. So we've seen an excess in one area of phase space. Let's look at that area of phase space again. But we did cheat slightly, so we changed the leading lepton PT cut to ease the estimation of the fake lepton background, although this is very small. This was so that we could use unisolated leptons and reverse the isolation cuts to find the background. The background estimation method.
This is a trigger effect because you have you don't have non-isolated leptons.
So
at that lower PT, or why did you have to move it up?
So the plan was that the trigger would not have unisolated leptons at low PT unprescaled. In the end, the trigger did have unisolated electrons at low PT because the luminosity never got very high.
Okay.
But the analysis was set up thinking that these triggers would end up in prescaled.
Okay.
So the background estimation method remains similar to the one discussed yesterday. And the background composition remains in order. So there's the flavor symmetrics, which is TT bar and WT. There's then the Di boson, the next largest background, Z plus jets, and then the rare top. So this is the run one plots, which I showed in one of the earlier slides. So the flavor symmetric background, this was discussed yesterday in quite some detail. So we have the E mu control region, and we use the symmetry between the decay modes to EE mu mu versus E mu. And this is used as the default method. The sidebands in MLL spectrum, which is expected to be well described, can also be used to normalize the Monte Carlo up or down. And for the default method, which is slightly different from run one, the mass window in the control region was widened slightly to increase the statistical power of the control region, because otherwise you expect to have identical numbers of events in the control region and the signal region, which is not an ideal case. The systematic error is roughly equal parts statistical and systematic in this background.
Why is the Z in the right plot? Why is the Z gamma not so peaked?
This is a very good question. Part of this effect is because you require large missing ET. And when you require large missing ET, you preferentially select events with poorly measured muons, particularly. Electrons are normally quite good because you can look at the calorimeter deposit to get the energy and you tend not to have massive tails, but you get muons that interact in the tracker, and therefore you get a straightened track. And therefore, when you off the mass, when you require large missing ET, the muon MLL spectrum starts very narrow and then it gets wider as you require missing energy.
Interesting. But the benefit of that is that it means it doesn't all end up in your actual on Z search region.
Well, when you require large missing energy, then the same number of events will have mismeasured jets in the electron and muon channel and will lie in this area, and then the ones which are have large missing energy because of the muons will fall outside the region. So you should end up with similar numbers of electron and muon events in the signal region still.
That's partially a feature of the delta phi jet magnetite. You suppress jet mismeasurements.
Yeah, and therefore you're left with the muons.
Can you remind me what the jet requirement is?
225. So the Z plus missing energy background comes from photon events. So we take photon events, and this is used to estimate the amount of fake missing energy, including non-prompt neutrinos, that we'd expect to be present in Z events. And so we take the missing energy spectrum effectively from the photon events, and we add to the missing energy the expected mismeasurement of the leptons based on the vector boson PT. So we reweight the photon spectrum to the Z spectrum, looking at well-measured events, and then we take the missing ET spectrum and add to it the contribution from the mismeasured leptons.
So where do you get the contribution from mismeasured leptons?
Monte Carlo.
Monte Carlo.
Purely Monte Carlo. And so the left-hand plot shows the closure of this in Monte Carlo. So you take Monte Carlo gamma plus jets, and then apply this method, and then see that you get closure in the Z plus jets Monte Carlo. So this is showing that the Monte Carlo says that the mismeasurement from non-prompt neutrinos and fake missing ET is the same in the gamma events and in the Z events. And then you can also apply it to the data. So obviously the signal region is out this way, above 225, and this is the missing ET spectrum coming from the gamma plus jet events in the data this time, obviously, and applying it to the data to give you your prediction. And you can see that there's very good agreement. So we then have numerous validation regions. So this green table here has the validation regions. So we have a validation region Z, which is what I just showed you. So the region with missing ET less than 225, and you look at the spectrum. There's a validation region for top, which is outside the MLL window. There's a validation for flavor symmetric backgrounds. And another validation region for flavor symmetric backgrounds with the widened MLL region. And these are in intermediate MET categories. We then have validation regions for the diboson backgrounds, which have additional lepton requirements. So there's a 3-lepton, a 4-lepton, and a 3-lepton validation regions to make sure that the Monte Carlo prediction for the dibosons is not wildly off.
Because so there's none of these validation regions covers the mismatch of leptons, right?
So the mismeasure, this top one, will include both the mismeasurement from the jets and the mismeasurement from the leptons.
But that's within in the Z peak.
So it's with yes, but the search is within the Z peak.
Well, so the MLL plot in the show earlier is misleading in that it's not used.
Yeah, the signal region is 81 to 1.
There's also a lot of validation of the shape of the Monte Carlo that goes on. The statistics are poor once you get up to Z events with high net, but we see no indication that it's badly modeled in the Monte Carlo.
So this is the plot that proves that the diboson background is not crazy. So these three are the Monte Carlo, pure Monte Carlo prediction of the WZ/ZZ. And these are the data, which shows, obviously there's not huge statistical power in this, but it does show that we have some confidence that the diboson background is not.
Which one is the on-Z low met?
On-Z low met is not in that plot. It's this distribution. So we don't obviously just integrate it, because then you just end up with the first two bins, but the shape of the distribution is showing that we know what we're doing. We also do this with a B tag and a B veto, where if you veto B jets, then you crush the TT bar background a lot, and then you can see a lot more of this tail. You can check that the tail is looking okay.
And in the end, the background isn't so big.
Yes. So the overall background composition is in this slide. So we see 21 events. We expected 10.3, of which the 10.3, half of them, we expect to be these TT bar and WT. Then 3 events of diboson, and 2 events with a 50% uncertainty of Z plus gamma, and then a very small amount of rare top events. And so, again, we see a bit of an excess. It's in the same place as the run one. And you look nervous at the results. So these are the properties of the signal region. So this is the MLL spectrum between 81 and 101. You can see that it's still looking fairly peaked around the Z value. The number of jets in the events, the missing energy in events, the HT of the events, so the sum of the jets, and the PT of the Z. It is interesting to note that the signal model that we choose to use for this search clearly is not what the data is trying to show us, because the number of jets in the signal model is vastly different from where we see the excess, and so is the PTZ.
I can't read the numbers. It's 920.
230, 940, 660.
Sorry, do you have a diagram for that?
So, I don't, but it's a gluino being produced. This is the mass of a neutralino, which sits somewhere in the spectrum. So it's 900, 230, and then there's a 50 GV LSP.
1 GV.
1 GV LSP.
So gluino to neutralino?
Gluino to neutralino plus 2 jets. Neutralino 2 to the LSP plus a Z.
Do you have the B and B distribution? B-jets?
No, we didn't publish that.
I have to check.
I'm pretty sure we didn't. I'm pretty sure I took all the ones from the...
It will definitely be in the paper.
It will be in the paper, but it's not in the conference.
So basically, all of the distributions look just like background.
Or they look like a signal that has a different spectrum to the one.
All of the distributions of the excess look like signal that looks like background.
You could say that. They look like a softer signal than the one we show on the plot.
In that 1 HT point there.
Yeah.
That's it.
1 HT
point.
So, one slide. It's basically lunchtime. So I chose to talk about 4 searches. I'm glad I didn't pick five, seeing how late it is, in detail. But we have six other public results from Run2 from the SUSE group. We obviously have others from Exotics, which can constrain SUSE models, and from the H group as well, which we'll hear about next from Brian. So we also have a one lepton plus jets plus missing ET search, which targets gluino and squark decays through an intermediate chargino. We have the high jet multiplicity plus missing ET search that I work on, which targets the trade-off between more hadronic activity and reduced missing ET. There's a two same sign leptons or three lepton plus jets plus missing ET, which targets these signatures at very low standard model backgrounds for a variety of different models, mainly gluino decays. There's the spottom search, which targets spottoms to bottom plus LSP. There's a two lepton stop search, which targets B chargino stop decays. And then there's the long-lived particle search, the pixel ZDX, which provides this curve here on the Gluino decay. So in conclusion, I've covered some of the searches for a natural-colored SUSE sector with the Run2 data. These have significant extensions of the excluded phase space of the Gluino beyond the massive Run1. In particular, for the natural GTT or GBB models, the exclusion reach is greater than about 1750 GV for LSPs below 500 GV. For the stop case, the exclusion region is also extending, but in my opinion, it's a bit less worrying, with the limits in the simplest, most optimistic scenarios of 750 GV, with no exclusion for any stops, with LSP masses above 275 GV. The Z plus missing ET case does bring some hope, although in the previous talk we heard that CMS see nothing. 2016 will hopefully see a very large increase in the integrated luminosity, assuming the LHC works fine, over the 2015 dataset, which will again dramatically expand the phase space, hopefully leading to the observation of a significant excess.
Can we go to the Gluino summary plot that you have? Because I want to understand one feature of this.
The one that he shared.
The one he shared. The
one that's not in my frame.
Okay, fine. Then I'll ask my question.
This one.
I think so, yes. That's the one. I was struck when I looked at this by the very large difference between the green and the green and the red, I think. The green and the red, right?
Yeah.
Because they're both zero lepton searches, and there is this a reflection of the low luminosity, meaning the 7-10 jets isn't quite really in it? Hitting its stride yet because you need more luminosity, or is this? I mean, what would the red analysis look like on the green interpretation? Is what I'm asking you, really.
So in run one, the red analysis tried in this grid, the WZ grid, so the with their 19 regions rather than just their 7, and they were worse down here.
Yeah, but that's because you. Is this an integrated luminosity thing that we just didn't get enough data in?
It's indicating that this model is harder to find than this model. This is the easiest model. It's got 4 B jets and 4 tops. Like, if we miss that, we're doing something stupid. This is 4 really hard jets and very hard missing energy. We should be able to see that. When you add in one step, we get leptons, and the blue curve is very powerful. When we add in two steps, the same sign analysis for this grid is light blue.
It's not the same one.
Yeah, it's different.
You're comparing two different models.
Yeah, but essentially what we're saying is as you add more steps, it becomes more and more difficult to see it.
And the most striking one is, to me, is the green and the red. And given the different analysis, I've sort of always wondered whether this is really kinematics, or is it just that eventually in the 7-jet analysis will catch up if you add more luminosity, because it's cleaner.
I think they're saying they're completely different models. We do not hear by dislocation.
One and the two are different models. Maybe you have the diagrams.
I'm wondering if there's an excess in one and a deficit in the other.
You can compare
the two. The difference is sort of large for being different in models. I mean, most of it should be just kinematics.
So, but this explains some of it. So this is the one lepton analysis in the one that's more powerful. And you can see the expected limit lies about 80 GV short of the observed. This is the 7 to 10 jet analysis. And you can see the observed lies 50 GV short of the expected. So that explains a bit of the difference between this blue one and this green one. Mm-hmm. It explains about 100 and something GV, which is about that much.
So that one looks kind of more leptons on average too, right? Which means you would throw them away with the hadronic search?
But this is the limit from the two same sign or three lepton analysis.
I was talking about green versus red again.
Yeah. Oh, green versus red.
That's sort of a difference. Since those are hadronic analyses, a lot of that could be signal efficiency just from the leptonic event.
Yes. I mean, this analysis was designed to look at this grid. So you'd hope it was better at this grid than the other analysis.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
It would be interesting for them to run over it and see what curve they got. But I would assume it was less than the grid.
Is it sort of, if you look at I'm asking the question because I'm equally mystified that in run two, the all-hadronic stop versus the one lepton stop in CMS, not even in the compressed region, is there an advantage for the one lepton? And my conclusion there is that we just haven't taken enough data, and that eventually you'll win. But I was just wondering whether something like that is happening here.
You think eventually the hadronic search will win?
Eventually the hadronic will win at the high mass, and the leptonic will win at the intermediate masses up in LSP mass. That's my expectation.
Yeah, so you kind of see that in this same two-step model. So this is the same WZ two-step model. Then this is the all hadronic search. This is the whole hadronic search in red, and this is the same sign search in blue.
Yeah.
And this is the run one limit, and this part here is from the equivalent of the red search, and this part here is equivalent of the blue search. So you see that for these points, which you're getting up towards the more compressed region, it is the same sign three lepton search that provides the limit.
Yeah, but the conclusion of this is independent of the data, amount of data you have. It will always be...
Yes.
Yeah.
It will always be like this picture, independent of what luminosity we took.
Unless you end up to a scenario where you have no events expected from the same sign analysis. But we're not there.
Ah. So for the stop limit, if we're down with where the little excision from the boosted and then the first block.
So the one that was in the presentation?
Yeah.
It doesn't like rendering.
Yeah, so obviously you can change your, once you pick which one you want to plot, but have you looked at what the other signal regions have to say for the points that are not excluded by the...
Oh, you mean if this signal region could actually exclude this point here?
For example.
So, I don't believe we have. I mean, I expect it could exclude some of them, but not all of them.
There's no other signal regions that...
There's only three signal regions.
...to any of the points that look like fluctuations?
So, there are three signal regions. One of the signal regions is designed for things that are incredibly boosted. It's the one that's designed for this model over here. So it has very little sensitivity in this plane. Whether this signal region could actually exclude some of this area is probable. But you then introduce the bias by picking the one that agrees.
I modify the result. It's just your curious one to see it.
I think the question is good because you can overlay all the signal regions and just compare. And then if you need, I mean, if one signal region, which is not the expected best, so not the one you've actually chosen, but does exclude very well the area, which is interesting, then
you know it's you've not got the right model.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that these kind of things are usually, I mean, usually when we have the paper, we have the signal.
Yeah.
And I don't know if for these preliminary results this has been public.
There's very little
public,
ox material.
Probably not, but it seems supporting.
Yeah. When we produce the papers, we produce the whole efficiencies and we produce individual curves for every signal region and things. But when we produce the confidence, then we don't publish all that. So we have most of it ready for the paper, but I can't show you. And I've not looked at it for this case.
All right, well, I think we've had ample time for questions. Of course, the astute observer recognizes that we are not going to continue to our next talk just yet. So we'll break now for an hour for lunch, and then we'll have Brian's talk after break. We'll start with everyone talking.
What time
we'll resume at 2 o'clock.
Two o'clock.
All right, so that's...